Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the February 28, 2021 session, focusing on Mark chapter 8, verses 31 through 38, Lose to Gain. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm David Adams.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
Well, welcome back, David. We're glad to have you joining us. Daniel was unable to make it this week, and I'm so glad you were available to join us again. Well, we have been in this pandemic for, 7 years now, and or at least it feels that way.
Yeah.
And it's been long enough that I think all of us have things we miss that we really wish we were able to do. So I'm curious, what are you most looking forward to post-pandemic?
Well, it sounds like the right thing for a pastor to say, but I'm serious. I look forward to gathering together with the people of University Baptist Church again. It's been a long time. And then after that, gathering with the rabbi at the tavern, which we haven't done in almost a year.
Oh. Wow.
Wow. I think mine would be along the same things. Theme, just gathering, being with people, and hugging. I miss getting to hug people. So,
I want to go someplace.
Yeah.
Just anywhere would be good. I mean, I leave the house once a week to preach a sermon, and then I come home.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So I would love to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that I can add anything to what you guys have said. I mean, I certainly agree with all of it, especially the hugging part. I do miss hugging. I actually broke that rule the other day. said, "Dadgummit, I'm just going to hug you." But I think for travel, one of the things that Regina and I have found ourselves doing, because we love to travel, is planning trips without dates. Well, let's plan the itinerary day one, day two. But, you know, just hoping one day we can actually return to the ability to get out and go. There's also eating out. Mm-hmm. Just so many things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that we're all able to return to those more social activities soon, and leave this pandemic behind. It's been a tough road, and we're not done yet. So, we all have a time still to be careful for ourselves and for others. Well, we are in the book of Mark, and Bert, would you help us get started?
Jesus turns to Peter, his disciple, and says, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Eugene Peterson translates it this way in the Message: "Peter, get out of my way. Satan, get lost. You have no idea how it works, how God works." It's almost as if Jesus is channeling 2,000 years before the rapper Ludacris, "Move out the way, Beelzebub, move out the way." Okay, some of you will get it. Anyway, as Nikki always does, she provides an excellent introduction to our text today in her background video. I really encourage you to watch it, because rather than echo what she draws our attention to, which is the text as a whole, the way of Christ being set apart from the way of the world, the way of sacrifice, the way of love, as opposed to the way of self-preservation, I would like to talk for the next few minutes about Satan. Peter. In one of my favorite Rolling Stones songs, Sympathy for the Devil, Mick Jagger repeats, "Pleased to meet you, hope you guessed my name." Well, in this case, his name is Peter. Peter, the disciple, the one whom, according to church tradition, is crucified upside down because he insists he's not worthy to die in the same manner as his Lord. "Pleased to meet you," Mick and the Stones imagine the devil saying. "Hope you guessed my name." It's Peter, one of the most important disciples in any one of the four gospel accounts. Peter, who confronts Jesus, who corrects Jesus, who rebukes Jesus when Jesus speaks about the way of sacrificial love. The way of sacrificial love, which directly contradicts the thrill of violent revolution, a Jewish coup d'etat against their Roman oppressors. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guessed my name. Our medieval imagery of Satan blinds us to the biblical witness of Satan, the adversary. That's what the Hebrew word that we translate as Satan means, adversary. Whether the adversary is approaching God with a bet, a friendly bet in the book of Job, or tempting Jesus in the wilderness to follow the path of strength and power and dominance, or rebuking Jesus for speaking about the way of the cross, whether it's demonic forces throughout Mark's gospel and the other gospels that we've even talked about just a few weeks ago that Jesus is casting out in the gospels, the biblical witness is clear that anything that alienates people from the ways of God and that alienates people from one another, these are demonic things. These things are the things of the devil. These are things that are adversarial to the will of God. And rather than being some scary little imp with horns and a devil that we've turned into a really funny Halloween costume, the devil is in a disciple, one of the most notable disciples. And if God's adversary, the one who gets in the way of Jesus, if Satan is within one of the most important disciples, then, well, pleased to meet you. Won't you guess my name? Anytime we oppose the way of Christ, anytime we insist on the way of coercion, the way of power, the way of wealth, the way of self-reliance, the way of self-importance, the way of self-aggrandizement, the way of taking the easy way out, the way of anger and hostility, the way of the sword, the way of the guns and bombs and violence, the way of rivalry and conflict, the way of us versus them, anytime we choose these ways, anytime we stand in the way of justice, of mercy, of humility, of grace, of forgiveness, anytime we stand in the way of Jesus' wildly inclusive love for all God's children, then, well, you can guess our name. Before we get too haughty in our faith, we like to point out all the satanic influences all around us, don't we? Well, we may do well to look in the mirror, and we may find Jesus staring at our spiritual pride, at our own church agendas, which are not always in keeping with the way of sacrificial love and humility. And we may just find Jesus rebuking you and me. So if you meet me, have some courtesy, have some sympathy, and some taste. For while I may be the devil standing in the way of God's plans at this moment, just like Peter, I'm still a child of God, bearing the likeness of God, and still loved fully and completely by Christ. And maybe I'll be able to remember the same is true about all of you, you little devils.
Have you ever noticed how much trouble we seem to go through to keep faith from happening? It's almost like if people live in a faithful way, if they demand obedience, if they demand to follow the simple things Jesus puts down, they're threatened. You're going to ask us to do that? Well, we don't want to see that happen. So we're going to get in your way to keep that from happening. And if we don't get in your way to keep that from happening, we'll let something else get in our way to keep it from happening. I'm stricken, Bert, by your conversations here and how you point out that the accuser is really just another thing that gets in the way. It deliberately gets in the way, but gets in the way. And how so much of the frustration we have with doing faith, with being faithful people, is that, again, there's this things that get in the way aspect to it. And sometimes, as you pointed out, we're the ones that get in the way. But we don't often want to talk about how it's a getting in the way. We want to make it something bigger. One image that came up is like when I play basketball, I'm kind of old, I don't get to play it much anymore. But one of the best parts about playing basketball, playing defense in basketball, is you get in people's way. That's all you have to do. You don't have to steal the ball. You don't have to do anything else. You just have to get in the way because they have a plan that they want to see happen. And by getting in their way, it messes them up and discombobulates them. It's really great defense. But how many people are playing defense for faith? We're just getting in the way. You know, and it really, that comes out of what you're saying here about Satan as being a, there's not a good verb for that, but a, someone who gets in the way. We have this image, when we talk about Satan, especially, if you want to bring Satan up, we got this image of pointy tails and pitchforks and all these things. We have this image of a spectacular monster that we have to deal with. It's bigger than us, and it's evil and dark, and clouds are coming in, and all that kind of stuff. But the reality seems to be that it's something very simple. You know, it's that urge we have, again, to get in the way, to not let God do what God wants to do, to put ourselves ahead of others, you know, to not let Jesus reach people because we think our needs are more than theirs, you know, to do all those little things. That is the monster we're really fighting. There's this song that we talked about before we came on the podcast. It's titled, Why is the Devil Red? By a group called The Lost Dog, which everyone, of course, needs to listen to. But they keep asking those questions like, why is the devil red? Why isn't the devil blue? Or why is the devil red? Why is the devil you? Is a question they'll ask. Now, they talk about how you give Satan all these powers, like 15 toes, and you give him his devil power. It's all in the song. But the song gets down to the point where we make the devil to be all these things because we can't admit that it's us. And we don't want to talk about how it's us. So let's just have this big Satan figure that we can blame everything on. Because if we can do that, we don't have to get out of the way. We can continue to hide behind the lie that we're not the ones keeping Jesus from being able to do what he needs to do here.
My dad was a pastor, and he used to say that God gets blamed for a whole lot of things God had nothing to do with. And likewise, Satan gets blamed for a whole lot of things Satan had nothing to do with. And I think that there's so much wisdom in that, because when we do that, when we put the blame on these characters, we put the blame on God and on Satan, we ignore the part of about where we are partners with God in this world. And we can be good partners and we could be bad partners. We could be helpful partners or we can be partners who get in the way. But we have a role to play in this created world. God did not leave us to do nothing. We have our own work here. And so I love where this conversation is going, because I always get really uncomfortable when trying to talk about or teach about Satan, because I think that it does lend itself to being able to put all of our guilt or responsibility onto something else and not to hold it for ourselves. And so I love the way that this conversation is going.
Yeah, one of the great Christian prophets of our era once said, does it make it easier on you if you got someone else to blame? And it's a good question. Does it make it easier on you if you've got someone to blame? Well, yes, it does make it easier on us if we got someone to blame. And mm-hmm. you know, if we didn't have that big devil figure, we'd probably have to invent one because we can't deal with what's going to happen or what needs to happen. But there's another shoe on here that we hadn't talked about yet, and that is that Jesus is going to a place where he's doing something that people just don't expect. He's laying paradoxes and contradictions in front of people. He's talking about losing your life to gain it, you know, things like that. And it is awfully hard to accept some of the things that faith calls us to do, because there is so much of a paradox there. There's so much of a rejection of common wisdom in favor of something else. And when we're not ready to wrap our heads around that or just to accept it, we might want to hold up our hands and slow it down a little bit, give ourselves time to get some traction here. Get ourselves time to work that out and get it in our brain. Maybe we should blame somebody else for a while, though, because we don't want to be the ones who did that. I don't want to spoil the party.
So you'll go. Yeah. No, that was a Beatles reference for David Adams. Anyway, it's fascinating because just yesterday in my religion classes, in total religion classes, we were doing a very brief overview of Buddhism. And the Eightfold Path and students are wanting to know, well, exactly what does this mean? You know, because this is what we do. We analyze and it's kind of like, no. I don't tell you what it means. You have to live with this for the rest of your life and follow this path and wrestle with these meanings, right? Mindfulness, right? This, right? That, right? And in Buddhism, it may be several lifetimes. So, you know, you have to live with this. And I think that's part of the power of what Jesus does with contradictions, like almost like Zen koans, right? That these are these things that you have to, we don't want to have to stop and not have a clear answer to anything. How can I die to live? How can I? But this doesn't make any sense to me. I need something so I can keep going. Mm-hmm. And instead, Jesus invites us to stop and pause and live into these by untangling, by detaching. I'm stepping back from the microphone. Sorry. I feel like I'm teaching in class right now, so I'm getting excited. David's pulling back to the microphone. I get excited. Jesus is asking us to detach from all of our understandings and cultural learnings and innate, if there is anything innate, beliefs about the way things are, and really wrestle with this stuff and ask, what does it mean? And then we will find the answer, but there's no immediate answer for us that Jesus gives. He just says it, and then we have to live in this mystery, and we don't like mystery.
So Bert, I keep looking at the first part of this passage in verses 31 and 32, where Peter gets upset at what Jesus is teaching, right? And I guess I'm wondering, what part of it is he upset about, right? I mean, is he upset that Jesus is painting a picture of himself as losing in order to gain? Is he upset because he's going to be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and scribes and be killed? Is it the be killed part? Is it the rise again in 3 days part? I mean, what got Peter upset enough that he would, because it's kind of an interesting thought that, you know, someone to rebuke Jesus while Jesus is teaching. Let me pull you aside here a minute. Do you really want to be saying this? I don't know. What do y'all think? What part of that got Peter?
Probably all of it.
Yeah, I was going to say probably what Bert was talking about. It was, there's so much ambiguity in what Jesus says, and it leaves Peter with this, well, that doesn't sound right. Right? This idea of losing and dying. I think Peter it doesn't sound like what he expects, I think, is one thing. And I also think it's that ambiguity part of it, that it's not a clear teaching that gives you a step-by-step process of what to do or where to go or what to put where. It's more something that you learn to live with. And I think that that's part of what Peter is pushing against.
Yeah, and just to put it in other contexts, Peter probably had some plans. You know, he'd heard Jesus teaching. They've even had this conversation at other parts in the Gospels about where they're going to be in the kingdom of heaven and what position they're holding and all. He's got some plans. He's got some ideas. And he has some ideas of what Jesus is supposed to be. Just like all of us, we all tend to form this idea, this image of what Jesus is supposed to be. And when someone comes to us and says, you know, that image you got of Jesus and what he's supposed to be may not be the actual correct picture. Maybe you need to open your brain up a little bit. We get offended. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're liable to talk back too. So maybe Peter is sitting there watching all these plans dissolve and saying, well, wait a minute, that's not what I got into this for. That's not where I thought this was going to go.
Right.
And like all of us, he stops and says, hey, you can't do this. You can't talk that way. You know, I had these plans for you, Jesus. And now all of a sudden you've got your own plan. It doesn't fit what was in my brain. And I don't like that. So stop.
And I think that any of us who choose to follow this path have this same Peter moment. Wait a minute. Wait, no, that's not what I thought this was about. this isn't the way that this was supposed to go. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we all have that moment when we realize what it really means to walk this path of faith.
And if we're reading this in the larger context of Mark's story, it's just a few moments ago. If you're reading it out loud, just a few moments ago, this is a couple of weeks ago in our podcast text, Peter's on the mountain with mm-hmm. Jesus for the transfiguration. And mm-hmm. Jesus is shining like the sun, and he's up there with Moses and Elijah. So Peter has this, Jesus is bigger than these guys. Mm-hmm. And then here we go, just a few moments later in Mark's gospel, Jesus is talking about going into Jerusalem and dying and all this stuff. Wait. Yeah, I mean, this is happening quite fast. When you read this in Mark's gospel, mm-hmm. bam, this happens fast. So Peter's swinging. And yeah.
Life comes at you fast.
And I think part of Jesus's rebuke, I missed something.
Sorry.
The Gospel of Ferris Bueller.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think Jesus's rebuke of Peter here is in part, Peter, you're in the way, but also, Peter, I've got to focus on this. Stop giving me something else to look at. Because Jesus knows this is where things are headed. Jesus knows that the road ahead is going to be hard. And I think there is a sense of, Peter, you can't put other ideas. This is the way that we're going. And there's a temptation factor there for Jesus that I think he's pushing Peter back, saying, stop, because I can't go there.
I was listening to the conversation and couldn't help but think about places in my life where I have found myself having one image of what something is like, and then life shows up, and I suddenly realize that it's different than what I expected. I would say parenting is one of those things mm-hmm. where I had this picture of what it meant to have a bouncing baby and to be a parent and a dad and help this child grow. And, you know, and my children are adults now, but I have to say there were lots of points on that journey where it was not at all like what I expected it would be. Now, I could have chosen to just abandon parenthood. I could have said, this daddy thing's not what I expected, so I'm out. And I guess people do that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But I think the better path is to figure it out and to answer that call, because it's a hard thing for your expectations to be to not be met, and for it to be different and probably harder than we expected it to be.
But I think there's a great harm that's done when we live our lives in such a way as we expect our expectations to be mm-hmm. met.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. that we struggle when they're not met, which is maybe what Peter was doing here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking as we were talking as well about what it's like to preach, right? And I think any of us who have ever stood in the pulpit know this tension of, if I actually preach what I feel is in this text, how many people are going to get upset because it's not what they expect?
Right.
Well, and this is the history of the church, is basically Jesus telling the church, get behind me, Satan, right? I mean, whether it's, at least in the United States, whether it's the white church refusing to recognize the humanity and the image of God in our African-American sisters and brothers, whether it's refusing to acknowledge that God calls women into ministry to serve equally with men, whether it's that God can welcome and affirm LGBTQ individuals in leadership and as children fully welcomed as children of God, created as they are in the image of God. No. We will draw the line. We will not allow segregation. I mean, desegregation. This is not God's will. Get behind me, Satan. Right? No, women, God cannot speak through women. No, and get behind me, Satan. Continually mm-hmm. standing in the way of what God is doing.
It's Christ. Almost like God can't be God for some people unless God fills certain criteria. Mm. And if God doesn't do that, well then, okay, God can't be God then. It's got to be something else.
And to paraphrase Anne Lamott, we've we could safely assume we've created God in our image.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Mm. And we've done that. We've basically we've introduced ourselves.
So, David, as you were talking earlier about our ability to become, or say, as Bert said, be little, you know, the little devils that you know, we get in the way. I couldn't help but remember an experience. It was a repeated experience that I had while I was in college. Because, okay, I'm small of stature. I'm short. And at that time, I was also skinny. So I was short and skinny. And so crowds, for me, were a big problem. Because I couldn't see over them, and I couldn't usually get through them very easily. Well, thankfully, my roommate at the time, Matt, was a big guy. He was like really tall, and he wasn't big by him, but he was, you know, he was well built. And so when we would go to concerts, he would say, "All right, Dave, grab hold of the back of my belt and hang on." And he would put his arm out and just plow through the crowd. And there I was in tow. And we really perfected this, by the way. And we could really get positioned well, you know, on the floor level for a concert. And I thought of that only because perhaps that is a bit of what we ought to be trying to do. That there are all these expectations and presuppositions about what following Jesus is really about, and they get in our way. And maybe what we can do for one another, maybe what the church is called to do, is to be Matt and put our arm out, hang on to the back of my belt, and plow in there, and move through those, help people through those barriers. Maybe we all need a Matt to guide us through. And maybe it is our faith in Christ that really plays that role. If we are open to the idea that Jesus may just be more and more difficult than we thought. May we persevere, and may we realize that as we lose ourselves, we gain so much more. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.